Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right. As usual, I'm quite excited for this next episode. We interviewed Orizia Bullard, who's one of our provider attorneys out of Atlanta. And we cover a range of things in this conversation, but we also added in a number of very creative options that she's developed. In addition to the standard unbundled, you know, drafting, limited appearance, and coaching, she offers things like writing a letter, negotiations, like alternative dispute resolution, and really has developed a creative suite of options that can fit in almost anyone's budget. We talk about the types of cases that may not be a fit for unbundled, and which is, you know, a lot less clients than maybe most attorneys would think, and also dive into the process she's been developing that has allowed her to convert about 3/4 of the leads we send her into paying clients. So 15 out of 20 clients we send her end up hiring her for some level of service. And even more importantly and more impressively, in my mind, about 98% of the clients that she enrolls enroll with her right over the phone. In other words, they never even come into the office. She has a law practice management, cloud-based practice manager software she uses, where she electronically sends the retainer agreements, the documentation, and everything they need to make the payment right there electronically, and delivers the services electronically. Clients can then download the documents, and really has developed a streamlined process where, you know, she can get, you know, documents out the door in as little as an hour to an hour and a half, including the time of her paralegal. So it's a great example and a great window into modern practice of law, embracing and leveraging technology to be able to streamline the practice, deliver the tasks, and deliver these services much more efficiently, much more quickly, and as a result, delivering great value to the client, and also at the same time having a very, very generous effective hourly rate. It's close to $500 per hour when she does the drafting. So really exciting to dive in today, and we certainly hope you enjoy the episode. So with that, let's get right into it. This interview with Orizia Bullard, one of our provider attorneys out of Atlanta, Georgia. All right, Orizia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, really appreciate you coming on to share how you've been doing and the process you've developed and the excellent results you've been creating with the clients we've been sending you in the Atlanta, Georgia area. So really appreciate you taking on, jumping on and take the time, and looking forward to diving in.
Wonderful.
All right. So maybe a good place to start today would just be to, you know, to get to know you a little better. Maybe you could share a bit about your background, where you went to school, and the focus of your practice in the Atlanta region.
I attended school at Atlanta's John Marshall. I've been practicing law for only 3 years, but I've definitely had my feet wet. I do primarily family law. I do a little estate planning and probate as well, but I would say about 80% of my practice tends to focus in on family law.
Okay. And so you've been servicing a few different counties in the Atlanta region. Maybe you can share a bit about, you know, roughly how many leads or so, how many clients you've been sending you, roughly how you've been doing from a conversion rate standpoint, and then we can start to dive in, because obviously these are pretty good numbers. I already know what they are, but maybe you can share that, and then we can start to dive in a little bit more on how you've been able to accomplish this.
Certainly. I service about, I believe, 3 different regions. I get on a good week about 4 to 5 leads per day. So it tends to average to be about 20 leads per week sometimes. It gets slower sometimes, which causes it to be a little less. But in hypothetically a 20 lead week, I will convert approximately 15 in some type of service.
Right. Yeah. So over 2/3 of the leads, you know, 3/4 of the leads you've been converting into some form of a paying client. And we can kind of dive
Correct.
Into what those options are on what the different levels. But I mean, just.
Correct.
That's an excellent conversion rate. I mean, it's from day one, I think you really had some great results, as Graham was sharing with me. So I'm really happy to hear that things have been going so well so far.
Right. Mm-hmm. They have.
All right, great. So maybe what we could do is just dive right into, you know, from point A to point Z
you know, as much as we can, just to identify what's been working so well for you. One of the things that I've learned is that a lot of the clients you've been able to actually enroll right over the phone, which we have another interview coming out here at the same time with another attorney that's been able to do that. So we'd love to learn a little bit more about how it is you've been able to do that. So maybe a good place to start is, how do you currently receive the lead? Do you usually get it through the app, through your email, or do you get the text message? What's your primary, what's the way you receive the lead and get notified you have one?
Primarily it's through my email. I typically check my email quite frequently because it's on my phone. So I'll receive the lead through my email and make initial contact almost immediately through two different forms and a phone call. So I will immediately try to send a text message. I will then try to send an email, and then I will subsequently try to call them. I have a template that I use, and that template is the same template that I use for emails and text messages. That way I don't get overly burdened with trying to come up with a phraseology that I'm going to use to send them an email. And if I'm in court or if I'm in mediation, something where I can send something really quick via text or email, I already have that template. I can copy it, paste it, simply change their name to making it more personable. And usually I get a response, if not immediately, then a couple of minutes to hours later. If I'm still occupied at that time, I let them know, hey, I am in court right now, but I would love to talk to you once I get out of court. Can I call you at 4 o'clock or subsequent to the court adjourning? And they're more than happy to just wait 1 or 2 hours for me to contact them because I did make that initial contact so quickly.
Right. So in other words, even if you're not able to speak with that person right then and there, you're still sending them a text, sending them an email, letting them know, hey, we received your request. I'm currently in a meeting. You know, we're going to talk to you soon.
Correct. And that they're always super excited just to know that one, someone is acknowledging the fact that they need help, and two, someone is willing to give them a call upon their availability.
Right. Yeah. And can't really emphasize this point enough that even if you're, you know, just, you know, as attorneys, you're in and out of the office all the time. You're in court, you're in trial. I mean, you can't always respond in real time unless you have an assistant that's their dedicated duty. So, you know, it's understandable that you wouldn't be able to always call leads in real time, but if you can't, just sending that quick text message, quick email, something that reaches out to the client and notifies them, hey, we've received it. We're ready to assist you. We'll be in touch with you soon. Has them stop, you know, in many cases, we'll stop the search because if they don't hear back, they are, you know, they're going to keep looking, keep trying to find the assistance that they're actively looking for because most of the clients are coming through, have a real need they need to resolve immediately. And so just putting out some form of a contact like that really helps them to know that they have someone they're going to be able to talk to. And makes it so they don't feel like they have to keep searching for someone to talk to.
Exactly. And even if I'm not in court or mediation, or if I'm not occupied, I do call. So I don't just exclusively email, exclusively send a text message. If I'm available, the first voice they hear is my voice. It's not my assistant's voice saying, can we schedule a call with Attorney Bullard or schedule a meeting with Attorney Bullard. It's my voice, so they know you're speaking to the attorney.
And why do you feel like that's been so important for you to be the one to reach out to the clients and speak with them?
Because I have so many...
And I agree with that, by the way, 100%, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
I have so many people complain that they never get a chance to speak with the attorney, that the attorney is too busy. I can only get the secretary. I can only get the assistant, and they feel like they're important when you take out the time on your busy schedule to speak with them personally.
Yeah, and some of the clients are surprised, right? That they actually are able to just
Correct.
Immediately get access to an attorney.
I'm surprised at the number of clients that are surprised because that's typically what I do for first initiations. Is I like to do it myself. And I'm amazed at the number of attorneys that don't do that.
Right. It surprises us, too. It's one of the first things we talk about anytime we're working with a new attorney is that, you know, this might be a little different than what you currently do, but it's very important because people feel, like you said, they feel important. They feel cared about when it is the attorney that's able to reach out.
I agree.
Yep. Okay. So now let's say you've gotten them on the phone, you set up a time to speak with them, or you've just reached them right then and there and they're available to chat. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what you cover on the initial consultation. And I know your strategy is a little bit different because you're going to give them some options later on that allow them to either come in the office or just, you know, get started with you over the phone. What's your initial goal on the consultation? And maybe you can talk about kind of how you take them through that initial call, and then we can start diving into some of the options you offer.
So initially, when I get them on the phone, I introduce myself. I let them know that, you know, I'm here to assist them, and I leave it as an open dialogue. I ask them, how can I help you? What issue do you have that I may be able to assist you? And I begin to give them me a background of what their legal issue is. Once they begin to give me a background, I can pretty much sense whether or not they're going to need or what type of service they're going to need. But what I try not to do for at least the first couple of minutes is not interrupt them, because I want them to feel as though someone is listening to their problem. A lot of the clients that we convert, one of the things that they end up commending us for is taking the time to listen to them and not trying to force them into office to pay a consultation fee, not trying to rush them off of the phone because we're too busy and we don't want to deal with them. So we get commended for just taking the time to hear their problem. Now, I can't take 10 minutes to hear their problem because I am busy as well. They don't know that, but I can't take 10 minutes. So essentially, I allow them to give me their issues in about 2 minutes. And then once they begin giving me their issue, I prompt them with questions, because now I need to know what is the legal options that are available to you. And that cuts their story in half, so they won't keep me on the phone for 10 minutes, but we can get to the crux of the issue of the case. And by the time we get to the crux and I've prompted them with certain questions to inquire where we need to go with their issue, at that point I can discern from them and I can ask them, what are you trying to do? What is your solution? If this was a best case, worst case scenario, what would your best case look like? They would tell me what their best case looked like, and then I would tell them, this is what you can do in order to get to that best case, and I'm able to give them what I can offer them as an attorney.
Right. Okay. So maybe we should jump to that point there. So now that you've listened to them for a couple minutes, which is really key, because really, number one, they're really happy to hear from you as an attorney, but secondly, they're actually hearing from an attorney that's willing to take the time to listen to their situation. And, you know, that obviously develops rapport, of course, but certainly feels like, you know, again, their issue is important to you and that you care enough to listen to hear it out and really hear what's going on with their situation. I'm sure it really makes them feel comfortable right off the bat.
And I think you actually used the key phrase, which is building that rapport. Because by building that rapport over the phone, without them even having to see you in person, they already trust you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you've listened, you've asked some questions to really get down to, you know, are the custody orders in place? What are the kids' names, children, that kind of stuff. And then you've asked them, if you could have your situation turn out exactly the way you want, what would you like to see happen? Perfect scenario. And what would you like? And so now they've kind of painted the picture of, this is what I want to do. And this is what I want to see happen. So from there, maybe you can walk us through the next step as far as, you know, giving them the, you know, an idea of what needs to be done. And then, of course, how you can go about assisting them with making that happen for them.
So after they tell me their best case scenario, what that will look like, I inquire and I say, well, if that's your best case scenario, what's your budget? What are you able to afford into a plan in order to get that goal accomplished? You have some individuals that say, well, I never thought about that. I don't know what my budget should be. I don't know what attorneys cost. I don't know anything about the legal realm. I just know I need help. If that is the response, then I try to give them a range and I give them an option of, well, if this is your best case scenario and this is your goal, this is what is going to encompass. If it's something that we can do a motion hearing, then I advise them that we can accompany you to that motion hearing or to mediation to help resolve the case without it having to go to litigation. But I also tell them the cost associated with that. I tell them that attorney's fees are tend to be very expensive. Litigation is expensive. But if you can break it down in elements, you can probably get your goal accomplished a lot quicker or quicker than you thought just by having an attorney on your side to navigate you through these proceedings. If their response is, well, I think that I can't do anything. I can't represent myself. I'm not good in front of the courtroom. I'm scared to go in the courtroom. At that time, I offer them what we call full representation. And I allow them to know this is the cost associated with full representation. However, if you can't do that, I advise you to break it down into increments and elements, as I mentioned before, where maybe you retain us just to do your pleadings. And once we do the pleadings, you may have mandatory mediation that you can go to by yourself. You don't have to go in front of the court. It's a very informal setting. You can do that by yourself, and then maybe you want to come back to us for your final hearing where you have to go into the court. And usually they typically go for that, breaking it down to give them what their options are, what the stages of litigation are, because that's very important as well, to explain to them that litigation has different stages. And then you have some people as well that just want to be counseled. They're confident, they want to go through the process, they think they can do it, but they want an attorney in the background to assist them to make sure they're going down the right road.
How do you determine which clients, I mean, I'm sure they kind of feed back to you, but how is it, you know, what kind of questions do you ask, or how do you kind of start to determine? Obviously, there's the budget. So let's say they have, you know, maybe it's 500, maybe it's 1,000, maybe it's 2,000. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a determining factor in what options are available to them. But how do you begin to determine what the client feels like they can accomplish themselves, if anything at all, or their comfort level with handling parts of the case on their own?
I don't determine it. I let them tell me, because I can't determine how they feel. I can't determine how they think they may feel before a courtroom. So I really can't discern that. So I let them tell me, what is your comfort level? Do you think this is something that if you do not want full representation, you can handle in this part of litigation? If they say no, then we talk about other options. We talk about the full representation. We talk about the cost associated with that. And I have leads and clients that I convert that want full representation. I'm actually surprised at the number of clients I have that want full representation, instead of having the unbundled services, or they start with unbundled services and they come back later and want full representation after starting themselves. So even though they may tell me I'm comfortable in going to the temporary hearing because I know it's a temporary basis, I advise them on, you know, what the ramifications could be with the temporary basis. I let them know, call me, let me know how it goes. I always follow up with them. So if I know that a client has retained me for client counseling on a case, they want me to prep them for a temporary hearing. After that temporary hearing, I follow up with them because I want to know how did it go. If at that time they tell me, oh, you know, I'm not as comfortable as I thought. The courtroom is totally different. Can you represent me? Well, now, again, it goes back to building that rapport. They trust me because we've already had some form of relationship throughout this time where they're willing to retain me for the remainder of the case.
Right. And that's another really important point. If you start offering unbundled legal services and you're, you know, helping them to a certain point, and then they're handling some things on their own, like, for example, an appearance or a hearing, that you've actually scheduled a follow-up for yourself to check in with them to see how that went,
Correct.
How they're feeling about it, and see how they want to proceed with the next step from there, and if they want to come back and retain you for more limited service, or maybe have you take over the case from there. And it sounds like that happens quite often.
And I think that I know that follow-up is very important because it goes back to making them feel as though the attorney has time to listen to them and that they're important and their situation is important.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm sure they appreciate that aspect of it. And then from the business standpoint, if you've delivered unbundled legal services and then they've gone to court, I mean, if they're feeling uncomfortable or they're stuck, then there's a pretty good chance, and it sounds like on quite a number of occasions, those clients have then come back in for more service or even have retained you to handle the entire case from there going forward. Correct?
I've had a client call me in court, actually call me in court and wanted me to come to the court, which just so happened I did not have any hearings that day. I was available to pick up the rest of the case because they thought they could be able to do it. But once they got there, they weren't able to.
Yeah, it's a little different experience when you actually get there and you realize that what you say and what you do in front of that judge is going to ultimately have a significant determining factor in what you ultimately the amount of time you could have with your kids. I mean, people start to when the pressure's on and that situation arises. I'm assuming a lot of people may question their level of confidence in making sure that they can handle that aspect effectively.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I've heard a few different options. There's kind of breaking things up. Then you have the unbundled and you have the full representation. Maybe could you give kind of a snapshot look at what those options look like? Maybe some example price points of each option. And then maybe we can dive into kind of how you share with the client, these different options with a couple of different examples perhaps.
Well, we have several options. The first option obviously is full representation, where they want our firm to represent them in its totality of the case. Depending on the type of case, that retainer varies, but typically it's about $2,500. And that's for the full representation. Now we have several things thereafter. So if they just want us to do some drafting and some pleading, then that typically runs about $550, depending on what needs to be done. But the average is about $550 to about, I would say, no more than $700. If there is one court hearing that they want us to attend, then there's a price of $1,000. So if it's just one temporary hearing or if there is a mediation, then that retainer would typically be about $1,000. I think those are the main things that we do. Now, we do a couple of letters as well. So we have people who contact us who want a letter to an ex-spouse because they're in contempt of a final divorce decree and they're not ready to start litigation, but they just want to show this individual that they're serious about enforcing their rights. We have that same option with visitations. Sometimes fathers want to show the mother of their children that they're serious about having their visitation. We offer that at $200, or we compose a letter and we mail that to the opposing party saying that we represent them for that purpose and that, all of the enforceable language that needs to be in there. So those are the main things that we offer. We also offer what we call client counseling. So with client counseling, most people do that with an add-on with a pleading. So they'll have us draft a pleading and add on client counseling so we can actually walk them through how to get the other party served, how to request a temporary hearing before the court. We actually have them come into office and they're allowed 1 hour of time to sit down with the attorney. And typically that's about $200 as well.
Yeah, the letter actually I haven't heard too often as well. How often do you have folks taking you up on the offer to do the letter as an initial step? And has that been effective or not? And maybe you can share a bit about that option.
It's been very effective. Most people, if they're tight on money or they want to save money in order to be able to retain, they start with the letter to give the person a good faith, to make a good faith effort to give the person the opportunity to correct the issue. And that also serves as evidence in the court, because you can show the court that you really attempted to resolve the issue before you had to resort to litigation. And that's exactly what I tell the clients. If bare minimum, you can't do, retainer, you can't at this time afford to do start the case. Some people can't even afford the filing fees. Then let's send a letter on your behalf. And that letter has all of the language to let them know that you're trying to make a good faith effort to resolve the issue before or without going to litigation.
Right.
And I have several people, probably I would say 5 a month, that takes me up on the letter.
Right. That's that first step, right? And so maybe that's a great breakdown of the various different options. You know, we can dive into a couple of these here. Of the 15 out of 20 clients that are retaining you on that first step, what's kind of the breakdown? Like, I mean, obviously, people are at different points in their case. Some of them have already petitioned. Some are just starting the case. Some are going back to court. You know, they're at various different levels. What's the most common option that people will start with you out of those 15? I mean, what do you find people, do they typically will start with unbundled and do kind of drafting with some advice on how to file and so forth? Or do they go to the full rep route right away? Or, you know, or do they do a letter? I mean, it seems like, you know, obviously the lower cost, the more likely people will take that as a first step. But what have you found for yourself has been the option that's been most popular with your clients as a starting point?
Typically, people start in the middle. So out of the 15, about 8 of those 15 will want us to just draft the pleadings. So they're going to go for that middle level, about 550 to 750 level, for us to draft the pleadings and give it to them so they can move forward. Outside of that, I would have out, if I had to guess on the 15, because I'm horrible with math and percentages, that's why I went to law school. But I would say 8 would do the mid level with the drafting. About 2 would do a full retainer, and about 5 will do some type of informal, whether it's a letter. You know, I've done, and I didn't mention this earlier, I didn't think about it, I've been retained just for negotiations. So just to contact opposing counsel and try to work it out so it doesn't have to go further into litigation. That's typically around the 400, 550 range, because they're allotted about 2 hours of time. I charge $200 per hour. So most people, the 5 will do those direct letters or negotiations. And then again, about 8 will do the mid-level and 2 will do 4 retainers.
And what does the negotiation option look like for you? How has that worked? That's also kind of a unique approach as well. Have you found that to be successful or not? And how has that worked well? How has it worked for the clients, generally speaking?
The negotiation option is something we just recently implemented and started offering to the clients. What I started realizing is with some of these clients, they have issues where they just need an advocate on their behalf to speak with opposing counsel. So what we offer them is to make contact with opposing counsel on your behalf, present to them your settlement agreement or the terms of what you want to settle, get their settlement agreement or the terms they want to settle, and try to work it out before it has to go any further in litigation. And typically, right, that seems to be fairly easy. When a party files a case, they already typically know what they want. It's just a matter of trying to meet in the middle. It's a informal ADR process, essentially. So instead of having a formal mediation, you have the two parties trying to work it out prior to being forced into any other part of litigation.
Right. And the effectiveness of that, does that depend a lot upon the opposing counsel and how open they are willing to
Absolutely.
Negotiate or come up with a resolution?
Absolutely. It's 100% contingent on the type of opposing party that you have. If you have someone that's very litigious, then you're not going to get too far. You don't know that, unfortunately, until you get in the negotiation process. Sometimes the client will say, well, I know my spouse, they're not going to want to negotiate. But if they know their spouse and they know they're not going to negotiate, they typically don't go for the negotiation package. But if you have a spouse where they're just ready for it to be over, just like the client is, then they're more willing to be able to try to reach some type of compromise.
Yeah, and also what I'm really getting here is that, you know, you've used the word packages in a couple times, and I do see that as these are essentially packages of services that provide a certain amount of benefits or services contained within these packages. And you have packages for almost every price point. I mean, obviously, certain cases, they need to have the full representation to make the impact. And you have to kind of balance that out to make sure that, you know, you're providing them the option that is most suited to their case.
Honestly, I never thought about it that way until you just mentioned it, because I even say packages with my clients. But essentially, that's what it is. It's a menu of options, as if you are going to go to a restaurant, that you can combine to make your, you know, own entree of what you want to have done. It's no different than going to a photographer and picking out a package of pictures of how much you want to pay. You already have that price point in your head, and then you seeing what you get for that price point.
Right. How much of the clients, when you talk to them, do you feel like their case would not be a fit to be unbundled to this type of an option? Obviously, I'm hearing only 2 out of 15 initially go full wrap. Obviously, a lot of clients later on, once you perform some services, may need the full wrap because it's clearly going to be litigated and they need someone in court and they can't handle it on their own. So, you know, certainly more than those two will evolve into full representation. But one of the things I hear from a lot of lawyers is they'll say, you know, I'm getting a lot of leads, but these don't seem like the kind of cases that can be unbundled, but they're the same leads. And so, you know, how do you think about that, and how many of the clients do you look at and go, yeah, this really can't be bundled? Or do you feel like they all can be to a certain degree because you're certain only handling specific tasks and then they transition? Can you share your thoughts on that?
There's not too many cases that cannot be unbundled. I believe thus far, I believe I've been with you all a short amount of time, maybe a couple of months. And I've only had about 3 clients that I had to say, you really need full rep, and I cannot offer you any type of unbundled service. And that's more of an ethical issue. It has more so to do with their specific factual situation. And if I was to provide them an unbundled service, I would be doing them in their case more harm than I would be in helping them. But I would definitely say it's only been about 3 in about 4 to 5 months.
Can you give some examples from your perspective on cases that or characteristics of specific cases that would meet, that would lend them to be not suitable for unbundled, for unbundling?
I was just trying to think of an example while I was speaking, because I just had one recently. And I remember what it was. This specific case was a third-party guardianship, essentially. So this individual, she was very connected to a minor child, but she was not related to the minor child. And because she was not related to the minor child, she did not have any custody rights, and she did not have rights to guardianship because, unfortunately, her ex-husband had the guardianship. So her case required more research to even see if she had rights to the child, what she can do. In Georgia, we have a third-party custody statute, but that only involves immediate family members, such as a father, mother, sister, brother, where she was neither of those. She was actually an in-law. So she was the aunt that was an in-law to a child, but she had raised the child since the child was about 10 weeks. And now the child is 6 years old. Out of nowhere, the child gets ripped away from her. And you can only imagine, even though the child is not hers and there's no relation, she felt as though her child was being taken away. So that type of situation, I really could not offer her any unbundled services because, one, it was such a convoluted situation, given the law and given that she really legally didn't have any rights to the child, that it would have required tons of research and for me to be able to be in the case to argue her point, and possibly it could have set some precedent. But if I was to advise her of I can do a pleading, I wouldn't even know what pleading to do at that point because technically she doesn't have any rights under the law. So that is one of the cases where I could not really do anything with her or for her without full representation because the case was so convoluted.
Right, exactly. And do you feel like some cases involving, I'm not sure what it's called in Georgia, but CPS or DCF, or, you know, when you have the third party other organization that's gotten involved or is trying to remove the child or something like that. Do you feel like there's still some aspects of those types of cases that you can unbundle either by giving them counseling or drafting or responses and so forth, or is that, would that be another example of something where they really just need full representation to have an impact?
That would be an example. So here we call it DSS, Department of Child Services, and that will be a perfect example, because at that point, because of the way the law is set up and you have to have these hearings within so many days, there has to be a case plan. You have a third party, which is the department, having to do certain statutory things, and a client cannot represent themselves in that case. And I believe that's why the statute is written, where certain individuals in those cases, they're automatically appointed an attorney because they know people cannot represent themselves in that type of case.
Okay, great. I appreciate your thoughts on that. And so we've got drafting, we've got, hearing or basically an appearance, letters, counseling, which is, advice and guidance. You've got conflict resolution or basically negotiation, alternative dispute resolution, which is great. And then in full representation, you said the retainer is usually around $2,500. Do you typically require that all up front, or are there circumstances where you might take a little bit less and then put together some form of a payment plan that suits their budget?
There are circumstances that I will take less and come up with a payment plan, but surprisingly, and this is surprising to me, most people are able to pay the full retainer. If there are people who are unable to pay the full retainer, I do accept payment plans. I do have very strict conditions as to those payment plans, just because to me, that's a courtesy to you to be able to break those payments up. So I will require at least half down to get started. And then the remaining half, we can take it out. You have to put a credit card on file or some type of card, and it's taken out according to your pay period. So if hypothetically the person puts down $1,000 and break the second $1,000 up, if it's a $2,000 retainer, into 2 months, on the 10th of each month, we run your card for $500, and then the subsequent month, we'll run it again for $500. So we offer those plans. We just have very strict conditions. If you default on your payment plan, the full retainer is due within so many days. And again, right. I'm surprised at the number of people who just actually, they're able to pay the full retainer.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, and they really need the full representation, people either individually or through the help of family can often find the money when it comes to their rights to their kids. So it's not surprising. Mm-hmm.
I've had people that actually go title their, pun title to their vehicles, because their kids are more important than their vehicle.
Yep, they absolutely are. And by the way, for those payments, do you use something like LawPay or a payment processing solution that automates those payments for you? Or do you run them manually?
No, I use MyCase. MyCase has that system where you're able to accept payments through their online portal. So I have my secretary run them manually.
Okay. And then the other thing I wanted to cover here is out of the 15 out of 20 or so clients that are retaining you for services, what percentage of the clients would you say retain you over the phone without meeting you in person, versus what percentage of them, come in the office, you meet with them, and then they retain you from there?
98% retain me over the phone.
Over the phone?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So basically almost every single one of them just retains you over the phone. And so do they, when they retain you over the phone, is there also a meeting that's later scheduled to come in and do the work, or do you perform the services with them over the phone as well? And do you Skype? I mean, how has that worked out, or what does that look like?
The only time they have to come in, if they do the package that involves client counseling, then they come in, and obviously we need to sit down so I can instruct you on what you need to do going forward. But most of the time, I don't ever see them face to face. I just had a case where it was a lead that I converted into a client, and our first time meeting was last Wednesday when we had mediation. So that was a full retainer. We've already started discovery and you know, drafted pleadings, and I had never even seen the client. People tend to like convenience. And with my case, we upload all of the retainer agreements. We upload the intake form. They fill it out. They scan it, send it back to us, upload it. We get the information we need. We begin drafting. We upload it for them to review. If it's somebody that just got a package where we draft the pleadings, they tell us any corrections that need to be made. We make those corrections that we upload the final draft, and then they can download it and file it. So about 98% of the people I don't have to meet at all.
That's amazing. Can you share just how that's impacted your business as far as your ability to, you know, work from either your office or from home? Or, I mean, how has that, you know, really put you in a position where you can be a mobile attorney? I mean, work from, you know, any device anywhere, has it not?
It really helped. Before joining Unbundle Attorney, I was a mobile attorney anyway. So I wanted something that was going to be just as flexible as I am. And that has really helped, which is why that rapport building in the beginning is so important. Because if they're doing client draftings, the only thing I really have to do after my paralegal composed the documents is review it. So I don't have to take time, much time out of my day to sit down in front of a computer and with a person for so many hours or so many minutes within a day. I'm able to keep it a high volume of people that's coming in and going back out, just because we're able to streamline the work to our associates, or, well, not associates, but our paralegal. She's able to compose the documents, I review them, and then we can upload them. So it definitely has helped keep me mobile as I already was.
Right. Yeah, so there's the kind of location freedom as far as your ability to get the work done. Can you also talk about, you know, the drafting work? We've had a number of lawyers that do it on kind of a flat rate as opposed to hourly. Usually it works, you know, works out to a certain amount of time. But if it's a flat rate when you're doing an unbundled task, how much do you end up putting, you know, 2-3 hours into of your own personal time into each draft? Or are you able to leverage that somewhat by the use of your paralegal, and then you're reviewing and able to cut down some of the personal time you have to invest into drafting that unbundled, that flat rate work by leveraging the technology and also your paralegal's time?
That's exactly what I do. All of our drafting is done on a flat rate basis. We don't do any of our drafting on a hourly basis. We also do those on what we call a limited scope retainer, meaning we don't go above and beyond just the drafting of that document. And because I'm able to utilize my paralegal, who can also crank out the document, and just my only task at that point is to review it to make sure it's what the client wanted, is able to cut down on costs tremendously. And you're actually benefiting from doing it in a flat rate rather than hourly.
Absolutely. I mean, this is so key. I really want to cover this, you know, make sure we fully extract this, because, you know, I think there's a myth among many attorneys, we've talked about this before, where they assume that if you're working with people that are spending less money or have less income, that therefore that means you're going to make less money. And I think it's quite clear from all the examples of all the different attorneys we've had on this podcast, including yourself, that is just really isn't the case. Because when you really look at the economics of it, you've got the phone call, which probably takes you, let's be very, not conservative, but just liberal, like probably maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 20 minutes. How long does that the initial call take to get the client on the phone, do the initial consultation, get them enrolled? And we'll talk maybe more specifics about, you know, how you do that enrollment process and so forth. I think that's very interesting for attorneys to think about and hear how to do an enrollment over the phone. But how long does that initial call take? And then I guess the next step from there is all that information gets passed to paralegal, they draft, and then you review. So how much time do you put into that initial call and then that back end review?
The initial call, I would say on the high end for me, it's probably about 15 minutes on a high end. As if you recall, I told you I let them give me about 2 to 3 minutes to talk it out, and then I interrupt and I prompt them with questions. So I would say about 15 minutes on the high end. But as far as drafting, I totally agree with you. Although you're working with or you may be working with clients that have less means, the volume makes up for it. So you're able to produce so many documents in a short amount of time. Whereas if I can do, you know, five drafting of documents, and just because I'm horrible on math, I'm going to do $500. What is that? How much is that? 500 times five? 2,500?
Yes, 2,500. Yes.
Well, that's one full retainer. So if you're able just to do five of those in 1 week, that's equivalent to you just getting one full retainer. So the volume is really important. And because you're not doing it, it doesn't cause for a huge amount of time to do this drafting. Most of the pleadings are standard. A complaint is standard. A legitimation, a petition, you know, an answer. Those things are standard that most paralegals can crank out in honestly about 30 minutes.
Right. Once you have the fact, is there a way, a system you've developed to be able to extract or basically get the facts of the case from the client? Like, do they fill out a questionnaire, or when you do the consultation,
do
you advise that, you know, do you ask them questions and then write it into there? Or how do you get the information from the client to the paralegal to then do the drafting of the written argument?
I do two things. One is our intake form gives me the bare bone of what I need, date, address, names, all of that. That's going to be on my intake form. As it relates to facts, I have my clients write out a narrative. I tell them that you know your case better than I do. Give me a narrative of why we're bringing this case. What were the facts that brought this case to my office? And I give that narrative to the paralegal, and she's able to pull out the facts that needs to go into the complaint. So she's able to just, you know, when you tell a client to give you a narrative, they're going to give you their life story, but their life story is not relevant as it relates to that particular case. So she's able to discern and pull out just the facts that's needed for that particular pleading. And that's essentially how I get the facts. I don't really get them over the phone because, again, I'm very busy. For attorneys, time is money. But when you task them with homework to create that narrative, then one, it makes them think about their facts, to think about if this was the best route. And then two, you have on paper something that they gave you so they cannot later come back and say that we did something wrong, because this is what you provided with us, well, to us.
Right, exactly. So I want to kind of piece this whole intake, enrollment to intake to preparation, and then, you know, back to the client to file together. And then we can kind of look at the actual economics of that, because I think there's so much opportunity in offering these unbundled options from a financial standpoint as well. If it's just if you're able to properly leverage the technology to do the intake, get the narrative like you're describing, you know, have the paralegal draft it, or even if you were drafting it, all still pencils out, but have the paralegal draft it, review it, get it back to the client, give the instructions. I mean, a lot of these things, like you said, can be so streamlined, where the client's giving you the information, the paralegal's drafting, then you're delivering it, making sure that it's all clean and done well, but the technology enables you to do these things so quickly and efficiently. You know, offering these flat rate models can really start to pay off from a literally just an effective hourly rate. We talk just a bit about, so you're on the phone with them, you talk about, okay, so here's the things we need to do. So let's say just maybe you do a hypothetical example. I'm not sure if the hypothetical example will help here, but let's say it's a father that hasn't been able to see his child for a period of time because the mother's been not preventing him from allowing to do that. He doesn't have a court order established. He needs to establish something through the courts. And let's say he's got about, you know, $500 to $1,000 available. And you kind of explain to him, this is kind of what needs to be done. Maybe you can share, you know, how you would kind of explain to them what those options are. And then from there, how do you complete the enrollment process over the phone to get that person signed up and started?
So initially, if they've already told me, you know, this is what the facts that I have that I'm working with, I'm going to have $550 to $1,000 to essentially spend on attorney's fees, I let them know, well, look, for $1,000, I can offer a hearing and drafting of the pleadings. So they've already told me that this is the maximum I can do. And although separately, I may have charged $550 for the drafting of the pleading and $1,000 for a hearing. Because his budget is within that, very close to that frame, I will combine them for him. And I'll let him know that this is typically what I would charge. But if you want to do them together, I will essentially kind of discount it for you. And I will do a hearing, one hearing, and the drafting of the pleadings to get you started. I will explain to him what pleading would need to be drafted. That would be a petition for legitimation. I will explain to him what all that encompasses, the visitation, the child support, the custody arrangement, all of that good things. If he says, well, you know, I really didn't want to use my $1,000. I'd rather do the $550. I'll say, well, wonderful. We can help you with that as well. If you later want to come back to do the $1,000, we'll give you a discount for coming back as a returning client. But with $550, if you want to proceed, we'll be glad to draft your pleadings with you for you. We'll upload them so you can print them out yourself and you can take it to the courthouse. If he was to say, okay, wonderful, well, how do I get started? What do I do? I get his information. I'll get his name. I'll get his email address and his number, which typically I always already have because that came in the lead. But just to verify everything is correct, I tell them that I'm going to put you in our client portal. You'll get an email within 24 hours. You go sign up for the client portal. And by the time that you sign up, everything that you need will be uploaded. And they do just that. We put them in the client portal. By the time that they log in, they already have a domestic relation affidavit, a domestic relations intake form and a retainer agreement and an invoice all waiting for them. And if I don't see that they've logged in within 24 hours, I'll call them back and say, hey, information is waiting on you. When will you be logging in? And usually immediately they go log in. Sometimes they honestly just forget. So they log in, they download the intake form, they download the retainer, and they pay the invoice online. Once we get those documents back, I call them and confirm we received the retainer. We see that a payment has been made. Can you please produce me a narrative of the facts in this case? Once we get that narrative back, we start drafting, and it'll be ready for them to download after they review it and approve it.
Right.
And that's typically the life cycle of if they wanted us to draft just a pleading.
Right. So you get off the phone. Okay, you're going to be getting this. You're going to be getting this. And then you basically upload the documents that are necessary for their case, create the invoice, construct the limited scope retainer agreement. Do you modify that to a certain degree, or do you have something that's templated that applies for this drafting of these specific types of services for each package?
I have something that's templated, but I modify according to the client. So some clients want different things. And of course, if they're adding on something else, then I modify it for what they need.
Right. So after you get off the phone with the client, you basically put that together. That's why you say within 24 hours, because it gives you that little bit of buffer time to upload the appropriate documents and get the invoice done correctly, and then obviously modify the agreement if necessary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Yep. And so then they get that. So the payment actually isn't taken over the phone. You just upload them, send them that, and then they take care of it themselves from there?
Right. Now, some people, depending on the client, some of my older clients, who's not technologically savvy, they do prefer to pay over the phone, and we do take the payment over the phone. So it just depends on the client.
Right, and what works best for them. And is there ever a scenario when you do unbundled where you would break it up like, okay, they can make maybe pay half that down or something and then pay the rest once the documents are done? Or is it always they just needed the full $550 if they're going to do drafting?
Typically, it's the full $550. Now, I know some of my colleagues, they do allow you to make payments with until they're paid in full, then begin drafting. But the problem I foresee with that is that sometimes they will begin making payments on such a small amount. And in the middle of payments, they may have a hardship and they want a refund on everything they've paid to that point. Uh-huh. So we actually just require the full $550 because I tell my clients anything over $1,000, I typically allow clients to do payment plans. Anything under, we require in full for the simple fact that we do the work almost immediately we begin working. So if I was to allow them to start paying on it without starting work, then I'm essentially a savings account for you. And I don't want to put myself in that position where I'm just saving this money for you in trust, just not knowing whether or not I'm going to begin work. I like to get clients in the door, and I like to get them out of the door.
Right. As opposed to, you know, having a long relationship where they're making payments before you even start working with them. I mean, and I think, you know, different attorneys would, you know, agree or, you know, be comfortable with that, and others wouldn't, but I certainly understand where you're coming from. And you know, for the most part, $550 is still going to be probably about a tenth of what most attorneys are going to be quoting them to get started on a case, because most firms say $5,000 up front. So it's just for them, it, you know, they're happy to be able to work with an attorney usually for hundreds instead of thousands up front.
And that's what I remind them as well, is the reason we're able to offer these unbundled services at such a reasonable rate is because of things of like not having to hold money for clients. And, you know, it just works better because we are more reasonable than your average attorney.
Yep. Yeah, I get that. Okay, so once they get those documents, then they will complete a narration. And so just to picture it, for those that haven't seen this technology work, there's a place where the client can log in to a portal where they can then type in a field online their narration, which is their story, and then when they submit that gets delivered right into your matter section of my case?
Correct. So they can actually send messages back and forth through this portal with myself. It kind of reminds me of instant messaging or email per se. So they can actually type in that message, send it to me in my case, and that's typically how most people tend to do it.
Yep, and that appends right to that person's record or that person's file, and then all that information is available for your paralegal to access to then draft up the written argument.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so you take about 15 minutes to, you know, kind of get them set up, send out the portal, and maybe you can share, I don't know, but I'm assuming maybe 10, 15 minutes to make sure the agreements and documents are uploaded. Once they complete that, you might have a bit of follow-up, but let's just say on the front end, it's, you know, maybe 30 minutes to 45 minutes to get them set up. Once they get their narration in, the paralegal drafts it all, or do you also oversee the preparation part? Or do they pretty much, once they have that information, they have everything they need to do?
Now, typically my paralegal does it. If she was a new paralegal, I would probably be more hands-on, but my particular paralegal is seasoned. So she's built a rapport with me where I can trust her to go ahead and do the initial drafting. And then I always review it before I upload it for the client to see.
Yep. And so then you take a little bit of time. Once they've drafted up, you kind of review things from there, make sure everything looks good, make corrections where necessary, and then that gets delivered back to the client through the client portal. Is that right? Where they can download
Correct.
And then print them out and bring them to the court.
Yep.
So I guess what I'm getting at is roughly how long, given you have these streamlined technologies in place and you have the paralegal's help, how for a $550 drafting of a document, how much of your own personal time usually is necessary to get that done? Is it, and you can give a range because every case is a little bit different, and sometimes you have to remind people to call you back and so forth, but roughly about how long does that take you personally to do that?
I would say on the low end, just me, not my paralegal, probably on a high end, to be honest, about 30 minutes in the totality of it, because 15 minutes on the high end for just a consultation. After that, it goes back to my paralegal for her to do the drafting, and it does not come back to me until final review. And it takes me about 15 minutes to final review it.
Right.
Now, if it's a very detailed pleading, if it's something such as discovery, it may take me about 30 to 45 minutes to review it.
Right. So probably 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the complexity of the case. And for attorneys that haven't used a paralegal before, do you pay your paralegal by the hour? Do you flat rate per job, or is it just kind of vary? How does that typically work?
No, I pay her by the hour.
Uh-huh.
She's paid by the hour.
Do you mind sharing what you pay the paralegal by hour?
Mm-hmm. She's paid $35 an hour.
Uh-huh. So $35 an hour. So, you know, and I'm not sure how many cases are being done, but let's say it's, you know, $50 or so per case getting it done, because it takes her about 30 minutes to an hour. So, you know, 30 minutes of time plus you pay the paralegal, that leaves about $500. So in about 30 minutes to an hour, you're generating about a $500 in revenue. So the effective hourly rate, and I guess that's, you know, why I'm capturing this, is to cement the point that your effective hourly rate in offering this unbundled service, something that most attorneys will never provide to them, is a tenth of what they'd be charged by a typical upfront retainer. So the client is ecstatic to be paying, to be working with an attorney and getting help for $500. And your effective hourly rate to deliver that service is as much as $500 per hour.
Yep, sounds about right.
And that's amazing. I mean, that's, to me, that's incredible, because not only you're delivering amazing service the client's really happy with, can make a difference for them and their ability to, you know, get through the process, get the proper facts presented to the judge. You've got the options available to give them guidance and advice from there. You've got options if they want more appearance, an appearance, if you've got options for forfeitation from there. So anyone that needs additional assistance can get it. But for many folks, you know, that may be enough to get the job done, and they're able to get in and out the door for something they can afford. And at the same time, you're able to make a very, very promising. I mean, there's not a whole lot of lawyers out there that can say that they make $500 an hour in family law effectively.
Right.
Exactly. That's awesome.
I agree.
Yeah. Right. Okay, cool. So I really, really appreciate you kind of getting into the details on how this all breaks down. And I think attorneys start to really think about this model and how they can start to reach folks, it really gets the sense that it's a win-win. You know, you've got the client really happy, you're happy because you're making the additional income, you have the leads coming in. I mean, this is a very different way of thinking about it. And when you have 2/3 of the marketplace in a position where they can't represent themselves, I mean, I'm not surprised that the courts have, you know, been overwhelmingly approving attorneys offering unbundled legal services, because it really is suiting the needs of the market and so many folks nationwide. And is that for you what for you has been the main reason that you feel this has been a fit and the types of service you want to offer to your clients?
Because it allows them to get quality representation at an affordable price. Everybody should be afforded the right to have some type of representation, even if it's someone in the background, even if it's someone just counseling you to tell you how to work through the system. The legal system is very complicated. If you don't know the process, if you don't know the lingo that's associated with it, it can become very frustrating. It's equivalent to trying to perform surgery on yourself. So the fact that you're able to give those clients some guidance in an area that most people don't know how to navigate at a very reasonable price, that's what motivates me in taking these cases for these clients. It's a great way to be able to offer them help and generate revenue.
At the same time, right. And there's so many folks that, yeah, it's so many folks that otherwise probably wouldn't be getting any help if it wasn't for you offering these types of options.
Correct.
So, and there's, you know, if there's no telling the impact that could have on their ability to, you know, get a fair custody order or your visitation and be involved with their kids if they're left on to their own devices to try to handle things 100% on their own.
Right. And as I tell people, some legal advice is better than no legal advice.
Exactly. All right. Well, Abrizia, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and share so openly with the process you've developed to work with the clients. We couldn't be happier with the services you've been offering, the feedback we've been getting, the clients we've been sending you, and pretty excited about your results financially as well, and the returns and the model you've worked out to work with folks. So thanks so much for sharing and for the work you're doing with the clients you're sending out in the Atlanta area.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a short amount of time, but it's definitely been beneficial.
Great. Glad to hear that. All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. To everyone else that's been listening, thanks so much for your participation. And if you're enjoying the show, feel free to share it, of course, with any other attorneys you think might be benefit from the suggestions that we've made or any of the ideas that have been shared. And with that, we will see you guys all on the next episode. Thanks so much. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.